Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Well, it's become official, just speaking to everybody involved. Tyron will continue to the process of going through surgery. This is a correctable situation, so he will not be available the rest of the season. So that's something that's just been determined, and I think, you know, clearly the focus is on him personally, and I think the surgery is scheduled for next week.
Tyron has done any and everything that he could possibly do with his condition to play. And as witnessed by the fact, I think he had 88 snaps last week. And so he's doing everything he can do. The facts are that he's a 10-year veteran, and this surgery at this time, not after the season, but at this particular time, is important for the rest of his career.
Another sucker punch for the Cowboys. You heard it there. Mike McCarthy and Jerry Jones weighing in on season-ending neck surgery for Tyron Smith, the guy protecting Dak Prescott in that blind side. This is concerning, Bobby, when you consider the pressure that Dak Prescott, who, by the way, is playing on that franchise tag this year, has found himself under. More pressure this season than at any point in his career. And we're also talking about the fact that you now have two rookies on this offensive line. You've lost your starting right tackle. And, oh, by the way, you also don't have your center, Joe Looney, there. Instead, you've got Tyler Biadasz.
Yeah, Biadasz. There you go.
You're saying it a lot.
You got it. Biadasz. We'll all learn it over time. And then, you know, 2 years from now, we'll be correcting everybody else around the league who says it wrong. That's the tough thing, too, is, you know, you're going to spend the rest of his career having to hear about it from other fans and analysts. They're going to say it wrong. It's going to drive us nuts. But, yeah, it is, you know, it's, I think the Biadasz move actually is one that's probably going to benefit them. I think so far what we've seen is he's looked better than Joe Looney, and that's not a knock against Joe Looney. Joe Looney did an admirable job 2 years ago filling in for Travis Frederick when he had Guyon Barre. I think he did an okay job at the start of the season, but I do think that Biadasz is just better than him at this point. But yeah, this is putting them in a really tough spot now at tackle. It was rough enough losing Lyle Collins. I think that was magnified by the insistence and digging in on using Terrence Steele there for the first 3.5 games before you finally realized, you know what, this may not be the job for him. And now
I don't know if that's going to be the job for him this weekend, Bobby, because I've tried to press if he's going to remain at that position. And before I've gotten immediate responses back on it, there hasn't been a response this week, making me think that there's going to be a change there.
And I would hope that they have recognized that. You know, there was a little bit of a, in fact, we can play the clip real quick, because this is an answer that frustrated me from Mike McCarthy after the game on Sunday.
What went into the decision? I'm sure it was one lead up to the game about, you know, how to approach right tackle with Tyron's return, you know, be it Brandon Knight or Terrence Steele. You get started with Taron, but then ultimately made the move there. Can you kind of walk through the decision making throughout that process?
Well, I mean, it's a process that really was, you know, working during the course of the week. We weren't 100% sure on Tyron, and so with that, we worked a number of different combinations, and then, you know, fully anticipated on both guys playing today. So, based on who started and who didn't is irrelevant.
All right, so we're not going to do Bobby Calls BS today, but if we were, that would be number one. Like, I think that's garbage. They did not just intend on playing both of them, and so it's irrelevant. No, it's absolutely relevant who started, because there were two sacks there that proved to be really critical to the Cowboys falling down in that game. But I think that they've probably figured out that Terrence Steele isn't the guy for this season. Maybe they like him long term, and I think they don't want to necessarily break him mentally by, you know, just throwing him to the bench. That's always a concern with a young player who's got a lot of potential, is that you don't want to break their spirit. But yeah, I think you have to roll with Brandon Knight. If that's Brandon Knight at left tackle or right tackle, I don't know. But wherever you put him, I don't know what you're going to do with the other spot. Do you kick out Connor Williams to tackle, where a lot of people think he might be better, and finally let Connor McGovern play on the inside, or go sign a Ron Leary to play on the inside? Do you let Brandon Knight take left tackle and then move Zach Martin out to right tackle? Or do you just keep everybody where they are and the right tackle becomes Terrence Steele, God forbid, I think right now, or, you know, one of these other guys they've signed, like Greg Sinnott or Jordan Mills, Adrian Waddle, the veteran tackle, he's out there. I've heard he's going to be ready to play here in about 2-3 weeks. He's a free agent that they could consider. They could get Cameron Irving back, who's been back at practice a little bit. They may look at him as somebody that they can put out there. They've got a lot of options. I think that they can write
options. They don't have not a lot of good options,
but I do think that they can win enough games to get into the playoffs with Brandon Knight and someone at right tackle, as long as the someone isn't Terrence Steele. If Terrence Steele is starting 16 games for you this year, I don't think you can make the playoffs.
Here's an ugly stat too. This from our NFL Network Research Department from Next Gen Stats, Pro Football Focus. According to the Next Gen Stats, Daniel Jones, Dak Prescott, the two most pressured QBs in the NFL, they are the only QBs to be pressured 70-plus times this season. How is that translated? Jones, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 61.0 passer rating under pressure this season. Here's Prescott, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, 68.0 passer rating under pressure this season.
Yeah, that's pretty rough for everybody involved. Luckily, I think the Giants don't necessarily have a pass rush that's that concerning to you. I think you can kind of feel a little bit better about it this week. And Dak Prescott, to his credit, has done a really good job of getting the ball out this year. He's not taking I remember that was a huge criticism of him 2017, 2018, is that he was taking too many sacks. He wasn't getting rid of the ball. I think that you're finding he's not only just
6.2 seconds, I believe, is what we reported on our NFL Network game day morning, a nugget that you found.
He's getting the ball out faster, which is great. That's the one aspect of it. But he's also sensing the pressure a little bit better earlier, and he's sliding up in the pocket, and he's, you know, even when he's extending plays, a lot of times when he would extend plays, they would just still result in a sack later or would be a scramble. He's able to extend plays, bail out at just the right time on the pressure, and hit people downfield. It's been good, but there's only so much that you can ask him to do there if the line's not going to hold up. And so, I mean, they've got a lot of questions already on the defensive side of the ball.
Franchise tag. Remember the biggest thing we talked about heading into the season? It's a gamble to not have that long-term security. Of course, you've got insurance policies and endorsement deals, et cetera. But think of the money that was left on the table. And I don't want to put this out in the universe, and you don't wish this on anyone, but it is a very concerning offensive. I mean, think how concerning this offensive line was when they would just lose Tyron Smith. I think in the Falcons game and how ugly that one was. Yeah. They're playing some tough teams coming up. I mean, they've got Baltimore Thursday Night Football.
Pittsburgh's coming down the road.
Pittsburgh is literally November 8th.
Pittsburgh, San Francisco. You've got, you know, still a couple you've got Arizona coming up. Kyler Murray's been really solid. There's a lot. And like we said earlier this week, the thought of Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson getting an open space against this defense, like I said, they may run just on their own for 300 yards, like the Browns did. But it's the defense is in a bad enough spot as it is. There's a lot that we need to fix on the defense, which we'll fix here shortly, or try and get some insight on how to fix from Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network. But this offensive line, I don't know how sustainable it is to play at this offensive level with a banged up offensive line like they have. Now, even with that banged up offensive line, they're still on pace. I tweeted out the stat this week. They're on pace to set the NFL record for most yards in a season, and they're on pace to set the NFL record for most points allowed in a season. But I mean, with how much Dak Prescott's been asked to pass in the second half, just with them getting down and him having to bring people back. I looked this up earlier this week. He has more passing yards in the second half of games this year than Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, and Dwayne Haskins, the other NFC East quarterbacks. He has more passing yards in the second half than those three do
Dwayne's
on the
not
season.
Your quarterback anymore.
Well, not anymore, but had been up until this point. And so he has more passing yards in the second half than those three do on the season as a whole. And so, I mean, he's been asked to do a lot. In fact, I think he would rank 15th in the NFL in passing yards if you just took his second half yards. I mean, he's been asked to do a lot, and that's great, I think, for him. Regardless of what happens with this team this year, I think his future is secure, that somebody's going to pay him, whether it's the Cowboys or somebody else, somebody is going to pay him to be their franchise quarterback because he's shown he can do it. But in terms of making a dent this year, and this talk of, man, we're close, Mike McCarthy is being brought in here to push this team over the edge, we're finding that they're not very close at all.
I'm just waiting for Dak Prescott to go to the New Orleans Saints and what Sean Payton would do for this
Belichick.
Player from Hot
Belichick. Louisiana. It's going to be a Belichick marriage.
I'm just telling you, I know the Saints like him. It'd be interesting.
Well,
and can you imagine, Jerry has always coveted Sean Payton here in Dallas, and not only does he not get his quarterback,
or maybe he realizes, or maybe you're just trying to get like Cowboys fans to like jump off a bridge right now. Goodness. You could look at it from the optimistic side and say that's the way he lures Sean Payton over here eventually. You could be optimistic about it, Jane, instead of being a negative Nancy.
Yeah, you know, and that's what's crazy is normally I am very optimistic. In fact, I get knocked for being a bit of a homer for this team. I think you sort of invest in these guys as a reporter. You get to know their families and you find yourself cheering for them and the coaching staff. Not having access to the locker room and these guys, I have never been more fully removed from it other than just being able to completely assess this thing from as objective as possible, which is what, full disclosure, what you're supposed to do as a reporter. But it's just not a good football team.
Yeah, let's just pull up all the clips of all the times you've said this is a bad football team in the last 2 weeks, and nobody has to wonder about your objectivity. That you're dishing it out to them. Normally, I'm the more aggressive one, and you're trying to say, hey, come on, you know, just a gentler hand here.
I think it is completely within the realm of possibility. Just like I said, I thought the Browns were going to come in here and do the thing. I think it's completely possible that the Giants could pull this one off.
Would there be any bigger meltdown than if Jason Garrett were to lead the Giants to be Team 40 Burger on Sunday and put up 40 on the Cowboys and have them lose? I think the Giants scoring 40 would cause a full-on meltdown from Cowboys fans. That would be about as ugly as it's ever been.
I just believe in karma. Sometimes karma doesn't always operate on the timeline that we would like. And I know a lot of people wanted to see Jason out of here, but the way he handled that, you know, I'm the petty princess. Like I am the pettiest.
That's why we get along so well. We're both so petty.
Very petty. The way that Jason handled the end days as it related to showing up to work, binder, you know, just the description that I would get from people in the building and them being equally incredulous. It's expected because that's who he is. It's just the fact that he actually did it. And you're cheating. You're open. We're in an open relationship at this point. And you're just like, yeah, that all great guys. I just believe karma works in funny ways. And I just feel like he's due.
Have you ever seen
goes up to New York and he loses Saquon Barkley. You know what I'm saying? Like you have one of your offensive linemen like opt out. He hasn't been given the best circumstance in New York. So I just feel like JG's owed a W here. He's taken a lot of L's in recent years.
Have you ever seen Me, Myself, and Irene?
No.
That's very Jason. You need to watch Me, Myself, and Irene, where Jim Carrey gets married, and then eventually she just runs off with the limo driver from their honeymoon. And, you know, he's just very kind of like, you know, well, she's happy. And, you know, that's very much... Jason, it was very kind of sad watching him go out the door. And then for Jerry at the press conference to go, Jason told us when we told him, like, man, there's no better guy you could hire than Mike McCarthy. It's like, my goodness, this is just sad. This is
It was hard to watch.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
And he's still so classy when he talks about this team.
He is. And you know, that's the one thing you can always say about him is that he's always going to take the high road. But we will later on today talk about Jason Garrett and the Giants in general with Paul Schwartz from the New York Post. But right now we're going to try and get some answers on this Cowboys defense and the troubles with effort from Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. Well, joining us now is Daniel Jeremiah. Daniel is a draft film NFL analyst for NFL Network. He is co-host of the Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks. It's one of the best podcasts out there. You can check out some of the interviews they've done recently with prospects who have opted out and some other interviews they do with people around the league. And you can follow him on all social media channels at Move the Sticks. And he is also the favorite son over at Appalachian State, 34-32 over Michigan, as everybody knows. And Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate you, Bobby. First of all, you covering up your Dodgers hat with the SD logo is that's a touch of class right there.
You know?
And knowing Jane as well as I do, and just getting to know you, I knew Jane wouldn't hang out with somebody that was a professed Dodger fan.
So no.
The fact you're at least trying to cover up those sins bodes well for the
Exactly. I'm a Rangers fan. We're not very good. And so right now it's just about, I like certain logos. Oakland's got a really nice one. I rotate this, the old Orioles logo, but I put this one on today and we started the podcast and I was like, that's not very inviting, especially after unconsciously twice during the offseason wearing a Longhorns shirt when we interviewed Tony Casillas and Neville Gallimore and totally forget it. Luckily I remembered the gray shirt when it was time for Lincoln Riley, but it wasn't even on purpose Longhorn trolling. So today I was like, I need to show that this wasn't on purpose.
Jane, do you want to hear a horrifying baseball hat story? So this is this will date me here. So my senior year of high school, I graduated class of 96 and did not have a girlfriend at the time. We were like for our prom. So me and a couple buddies went with these girls we were just friends with. And so we wore White Sox hats to the prom. Because when those had first come out, the black White Sox hat with the white socks, it was like those were the coolest things.
Everybody had it.
And you look back at those pictures now, and it's like the, for lack of a better word, the douchiest move of all time to actually have done that at a prom. And I just remember now as parents, you're like, what did their parents think when we show up to pick up their daughters wearing baseball hats? Like what's going on?
Well, I graduated in 99, so I was right behind you. And it literally, so I would imagine that you did, or your friend circle did, have the blonde frosted tips at one point. Yep.
Yep. That was in college for me. That was freshman year. It was not good.
And I know you've already, if people follow you on Twitter, they've probably seen you share the photo before. I know actually sophomore, junior year, though, you went the complete opposite direction and went clean shaved bald at App State.
Yeah, and I think there might have been a connection to the blonde tips on that. I think it might have been a failed experiment with the blonde tips. And then you just
like, I'm going to go completely the opposite way. Yeah, it makes sense. Well, when you look at this, I know last week, or earlier this week, you were one of the more critical analysts out there. Not the only one. Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman, some other folks really jumped on the Cowboys' effort. And, Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy, they've all pushed back against it. Jerry Jones actually gave an interview Friday morning to 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, and it was brought up that Irv had said it. And Jerry said, I respect him, but, I think that Mike McCarthy on the sideline, he's got a better grasp of it. But then he did end up saying, when Michael Irvin talks about somebody's effort, I do need to listen to what he's saying. And so it does make you wonder if there's some questions building there. But I guess talk about that, what you had seen on film. And is that something that I don't know how much you've watched in the first few weeks, but is that something that you saw that was unique to the Browns game, that they seem to not be giving effort? Or is this something that you think's been a season long issue for them?
So can I take you a little bit behind my process? So when I do the Charger games on the radio on Sundays. And so when I get back, I do the Aftermath show on Mondays, which is where we do kind of a deep dive on film. So I'll get home Sunday evening and I'll go through the box scores and I'll try and see, okay, what are some of the storylines or things that I'm just noticing there that I want to study and watch and figure out what the heck happened, whether it's something really good or something really bad. When you see a team that's rushed for 300 yards, obviously that gets your attention to say, okay, what the heck happened here? Is this just great Cleveland Browns or is this just terrible Dallas Cowboys? So that's how I arrived at studying, that side of the ball for that game. I haven't studied them as closely on some of their previous games. But then I'm hearing the reports, and Jane had even had a report out there with guys saying about the complicated scheme being an issue and they can't play fast. And so I'm like, okay, I went into it with the thought of, let's go. I'm going to watch this and see if guys don't know what they're doing, if there's just miscommunication. That's the frame of mind when I started watching the tape. And as I went along, I'm like, oh my gosh, the effort is so poor, especially on the backside of plays with nobody running to the football, sprinting to the football. And an old scouting, thing we were always taught when I was young in the scouting business was you can tell effort of defenses by if you get 11 guys into the frame. So when you're watching the all 22 and at the end of the play, you want to see as many hats in there as you can. Might not be making the tackle, but it shows you the overall effort and commitment from the defense. And it was embarrassing to see the lack of hats in the screen for some of those plays with the Cowboys. And then when you watch it, I saw guys not trying to get off blocks. Alden Smith getting blocked by a tight end on a reverse and not even giving any effort to try and get around it or get through it. It's just that was stuff you shouldn't happen. So it was just one play after another. Jalen Smith was guilty on several of them of just not giving effort at all on the backside. So I know they came out and pushed back against it, but I've just told everybody, look, Game Pass is out there. If you want to go watch it, if you're a fan, go pop on Game Pass and just do me a favor. Go watch the Buffalo Bills defense, then go watch the Indianapolis Colts defense, and then go watch the Cowboys defense and tell me which one of those looks different. And it's so obvious. You don't have to have been a scout in the National Football League to figure that out.
And Eberflus was here in Dallas. They could have gotten him to stay. I do want to ask you this. Xavier Woods made the comment that you can't expect full out effort on 70, plays. I don't want to paraphrase.
I've got the quote here. Do you want me to read it real quick? Okay. The quote was, the effort's been good on certain plays. Some guys, I mean, me included, there may be a lack, but overall the effort is there. We're in the NFL. You don't expect guys to go full speed for 70 plays. That's not possible. But when we're going to push as hard as we can, I mean, we know you don't expect the backside corner, which you just spoke of. You don't expect the backside corner to go make a play on the opposite side the whole time. That's just not possible, to be honest.
So before you even say anything, Daniel, Marcus Spears over on NFL Live, former Cowboy, he lost his mind over that comment. Now, I would argue that I think sometimes in these Zoom rooms, these virtual interviews, it's a little bit easier just to feel like you can speak freely. So maybe that was just him just being like, man, I mean, we're doing our best. But is that a fair assessment? Is that an assessment any defensive player should be making?
First of all, you never would ever say that publicly. That's the first point. No, and number two, there are some exceptions. Let me give you an example. If you're a 340-pound defensive tackle and you're in a two-minute drill and you can't get off the field and they're just going boom, 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 maybe you'll see some plays where he doesn't, anything out to the perimeter, he doesn't kind of get all the way out there. Never under any circumstance should anybody at the second or third level of defense not be busting it on every single snap. You should be in phenomenal shape. And I can tell you, having spent 4 years with the Baltimore Ravens, I never saw, and I'm not talking about games, I never saw Ray Lewis or Ed Reed not sprint to the football. They did every single time. I'm talking about in OTAs, much less in a National Football League game. Like, that was never an issue. And there's a reason why that defense was good year after year after year, because they set the standard for everybody of what was acceptable. And if you didn't sprint to the ball, you didn't play. And that's what's curious to me is, look, Mike Nolan was there in Baltimore. He's been around it. He's seen that type of effort. So that's why I was shocked to see one of his defenses playing with that lack of effort. And I would hope that he had addressed that. And I would think that he would have addressed that behind the closed doors. Now, if they don't want that to get out, that's fine. But to be a secondary player and say you take plays off, like, that's crazy. You guys should be able to run all day long.
Bobby, before you jump in here, I did want to bring this up. It is hard this year for us to get a real sense of what's going on in that locker room as it relates to the buy-in, as it relates to the confidence level, the effort, because it's hard to get a straight answer, obviously, in a virtual setting when it's out there for everyone. I think where a lot of us reporters find those nuggets is when everyone's in the scrums, we're walking away talking to this second, third string, whatever guy. So it's hard to get an assessment of that. But my hunch is, and I want to see if you'll follow me on this, what we do know is Sean Lee was an absolute beast as it related to studying the film, studying the tape. By all accounts, Leighton Van Der Esch is very much sort of a clone, a 2.0 Sean. When you look at the tape, does it look like he's being reactionary instead of anticipatory? Whereas when I would see Sean Lee, he could read a defense very quick and line the guys up. Could that be what's going on? Because even Mike McCarthy had said, it seems like these guys are improvising out there a little bit. So some people have been led to believe that's because they're not buying into the scheme. Could it be a combination of both not buying into the scheme, but also not doing the film study?
Yeah, I think you're unsure, and there's plays, especially in tight quarters, where you might not feel comfortable, like, which gap am I filling here? Where's he going? Where do I go off of what he's doing? that can be explained with, you know, maybe not understanding the scheme, or maybe you can even make the case, okay, this, we're asking these guys to do too much. What's not defensible is when you see the ball carrier and it's clear as day running down the sideline and you are not giving any effort to pursue it. So in short quarters, yeah, there can be some miscommunication. There could be a lack of film study, not knowing what your assignment is. There's a lot of different issues for what takes place inside that box. When the play gets outside the perimeter and it's just a pursuit drill, which every team in the league has done, you've done it since Pee Wee football, where it's just you take proper pursuit angles and you hustle to the football. That stuff is, that's just effort. There's no other way to describe that. That's just a plain lack of effort. But I think there's a whole host of things that could be going on inside the box.
Well, and
if the listeners haven't seen it, Bobby, they really need to go check out his film study, because when you see the four defenders on the ground and you highlight that, and then you're literally showing Jalen failing to make an effort. I mean, it's clear as day. So I thought it was very revealing and opened up a lot of people's eyes. So if you haven't checked it out, to our listeners, go check that out.
Well, and, you know, Daniel said at the end of there that there should never be any excusing effort. I remember when my son started playing middle school football 2 years ago, that I was having a talk with somebody and, you know, saying like, you know, what should we be looking for here with him? What should I, you know, potentially be trying to point out to him and say, hey, you need to get better at this and things like that. Like, what's the expectation there? And somebody said, you know, at that level, the expectation needs to be ability to follow instruction, just, you know, respecting coaches, ability to follow instruction, and effort. If they're really, that's the only thing you need to be critical of at that level about whatever they're doing on the field, is are they giving effort? And so it is interesting that, you know, something as basic as what is the introductory expectation of you at middle school football is something that the Cowboys seemingly struggled with. And, you know, you said you watched that game the closest. You haven't necessarily like done a deep dive on all the others, but I am curious, from that game and anything else you've seen from the Cowboys this year, where would you highlight or rank the Cowboys' biggest problem on defense? Because I think people are going, how do we fix this right now? So would you say, when you look at effort, talent, and then, you know, IQ, ability to key and diagnose, things like that, where would you look at and say, this needs to be priority number one, this needs to be fixed before anything else does?
Well, effort should be the easiest fix. I mean, that's done. You know, it's a little bit more difficult to add talent at this point in time in the process. You got who you got, you know, so they need some of their bigger name players to start playing better, with DeMarcus Lawrence probably being at the top of that list. They've got to get him on track and get him going. But if I was going to kind of rank him just off from what I've seen, I mean, I still think they have talent there. Talent's not playing up to expectation, but there's, you know, that there's a chance that can get better. It should get better with what they have. But the effort to me is like, it's number one. And then there's a gap between everything else. You've got to get that fixed, and it should be an easy fix, but it's not going to be an easy fix if you don't recognize it and you don't deal with it. So I had never heard that. I'm still tripping about that Xavier Woods comment. Like, I hadn't even heard that. I didn't know that he'd said that. That's crazy to me.
Well, and again, you've been around a lot of football and a lot of football coaches and players. I think I wish I could get in the locker room, and Mike McCarthy has now enforced this rule with players that they can't respond back to reporter texts, which has been fun. But I think what's been interesting to me is, even when this defense was struggling under Rod Marinelli, these guys had such an immense respect for Rod as a coach, but also as a man, the way he would invest in them, challenge them. He was on the sidelines barking at you. Like, he literally was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, there was this sweet side of him, and then there was this like insane person on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Right. We've got Mike Nolan up in the booth, and we've got players 4 weeks into the season saying the scheme's too complicated. Everson Griffin saying he's abandoning the 2-point stance because he's struggling with it. Xavier was talking about the effort. It almost feels a little disrespectful to this new coach. Am I reading too much into that?
Well, I just had this conversation with Bucky and a couple other guys in the NFL on the personnel side the other day about a team building philosophy. And one of the things we were discussing was, it's one thing to have veterans that come through your system that you re-sign to second and third contracts, and then you want to have that surrounded by a bunch of young guys who just they're energetic and they're going to play really hard. When you start bringing in a bunch of veteran players from outside your organization, where their standards that they've played in are different, and where they're probably not going to want to be coached at that point in their career, having been at other stops, I don't think that's a successful formula. And a lot of the, you know, we're talking about Everson Griffin coming in from outside the organization. Alden Smith, you know, even though he had a relationship with Mike Nolan, coming in from outside the organization. I don't know if they have enough good young players. And I don't like the aspect of trying to rely on a bunch of older veteran players that are coming from outside your building. I think it's almost a flawed team building philosophy when you look at it that way. But
it's fascinating you say that, because we were seeing defensive problems last year, and Michael Bennett was that, you know, they hadn't brought a lot of outside guys. If you think about it, to your point, they've done a really good job of homegrown talent, re-signing them. Everyone gets so frustrated, the Cowboys, every year we do the draft. Why aren't they like getting the, you know, why are in free agency rather, why aren't they getting the splashy player? Well, here's why: they believe in their system. And to their credit, I think they've had a lot of success with it. But Michael, I'm not saying Michael was to blame, because I thought Tyrone Crawford had a lot to do with some of the leadership, but we started noticing that trend starting last year with an outsider. So I think that's interesting. I'd really clued in on that one.
Well, and that's something that I think when we talked to people after the season, when you looked at what's the gap here, how did a team that was, you know, a plus 100 on the point differential, how did they become the only team to be plus 100 on the point differential and finish the season without a winning record? They're the first team since like 1990 to do that. And talking to people, you heard a lot of people talk about there were some leadership issues on defense. There were some, you know, accountability issues on defense. And so I almost wonder, do you think it's possible that if a team comes in and Mike Nolan comes in and Mike McCarthy comes in and the front office says, hey, this is what we really dealt with on defense last year, this was a big problem for us, is it possible that when you talk about that veteran, outside veteran thing, did they just go too far in the other direction to potentially go, let's fix this leadership issue?
Yeah, but I mean, I just don't, who is that? Like, who is that
leader? I think McCoy was supposed to be that guy before he got hurt, Gerald McCoy.
Yeah, well, and again, you're relying on somebody again coming in new, and that takes time to kind of get that going. But I just think when you look at that whole defense, you have a standard that you set, and that standard can be set over years and years and years and years of this is how we do things there. So you have a standard, and you also have a spokesman. So who's the standard, and then who's selling that to everybody else that comes in the building? We used to call it, like with Ray Lewis, I said, like, we had a bus driver. Once you have the bus driver, whoever you put on the bus, they know this is how it goes. We'd be in draft meetings and say, this guy hasn't played with like crazy, crazy effort. We'd like to see him play a little bit harder. Like, well, doesn't matter. He'd be spend a week with Ray Lewis, that'll all change because he's going to get it out of him. I don't know, when I look at the roster, I look at this Cowboys defense, like, who's that guy that's saying, this is our standard, and I'm going to make sure that you guys live up to it? I don't know.
It used to be Sean Lee.
Yeah, and he hasn't been, he can't be on the field.
Right.
And I think he has felt that he can't be a leader because he hasn't been on the field. And I hear Jalen Smith say it. He said it about five times the other day on the virtual call. Like, this is my defense, my team. He sees himself as the captain of the defense. But when he's not showing up on tape, I think it's hard for his teammates to buy in that he's the leader. So
you can't sell that message. You can't sell that message if you're not living it. So that's just tough to do. I mean, I've been fortunate to have been around some, you know, Hall of Fame defensive players. And it was both. It was, they were very vocal, and there was, you know, they would get on guys if they needed to get on guys. But at the end of the day, you didn't even say anything. Just watch them. Look at the hours they're putting in off the field, and look at how hard they play in every practice and in every game. It's just, again, I'll overuse the word, Jane, but I just think it's what's your standard? Like, where is the bar here? What's acceptable? Is acceptable, well, we can go hard on some plays, but not others, because we get tired, you know, it can get hot out there. I mean, is that where we are? Like, that's crazy to me.
Well, and you pointed to Jalen Smith, and we heard the comments from Xavier Woods. I think it's interesting that I think if you were to look at what defensive coach around the entire league coaches motor and effort more than anybody else, it's probably, you can make an argument, it's Rod Marinelli. Rod Marinelli, one of the big focuses of his defense has always been motor and getting upfield and playing fast and giving maximum effort. And that's something that I think has been a hallmark of the Cowboys defense, particularly in 2018 when they had that run after they got Amari Cooper. They played with a lot of effort and a lot of speed, and that was something you heard opposing coaches say is, man, they just fly to the ball. It's interesting to me that those are guys who came from the Marinelli scheme, but how do you think it is that, is it just Marinelli's not there to hold these guys accountable anymore, or did his messaging of motor not stick with them to the point that when a new coach comes in, they went, oh, okay, we can be a little bit more lax here. This doesn't seem to be as big an issue as it was to Rod Marinelli.
Yeah, it's hard to tell if you're not in the building of like where the breakdown was there. But, you know, the hope is that the message which Rod delivered and has delivered throughout his whole career, even on the Lions when they were terrible, they played really, really hard. And that's always been his reputation. And you, if you go to a practice and you hear him yelling sprint the whole time with how intense it is. So, but then that message needs to get down to the lower levels into the players, and then they have to start delivering that message. So to me, it looks to me like that when he left, and you bring in a new coordinator, and to me, it looks like that message that was with the players has not continued on, you know, and whether that's coming down from Mike Nolan or whether that's just been lost from player to player, I can't answer that.
How many defensive coordinators are up in the booth in the league? Do you know?
Is I'd have to look that up.
Or do we typically see them on the sidelines?
I'd have to look it up. I would guess it's over 50% on the sideline would be my guess, but I'd have to look that up.
When you looked, obviously, you are an incredible talent evaluator. You know, we've talked, obviously, during our draft shows every year about the Cowboys. Obviously, you go with the best player available. CeeDee Lamb was on the board. Yeah. But was there any defensive player in this draft, other than, obviously, we talked about Caleb on Chaisson, that could have made a difference at this point? Was Trevon Diggs the right pick in the second round? Like, if you had to do this draft over, knowing what we know now, is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, I would have still taken CeeDee Lamb because I thought he was the best receiver in the draft, and he's going to be a great player for them for a long, long time going forward. Diggs, that was a little bit higher than where I had him. I have to go back and look and see the corners that went right after him. I have it right here, actually. Let me pull it up.
Of course he does. So
what pick?
He was 50. He was picked 50.
50. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can pull up by position how I had the corners and see where he was.
I mean, and again, not to knock Trevon Diggs.
He was 51. And right after him was Christian Fulton and some of the other guys.
So he was my 49th player. Oh. And I had Christian Fulton one spot ahead of him. I mean, that's kind of about where he was. Golly, I had Damon Arnett after him, and the Raiders took him in the first round. That coffee was a little rich.
But, all right, I have another question then for you, Daniel. I know this is going to be a hard one to answer because I was talking to some people in just the league and the scouting departments, and the challenge with, you know, some, you know, colleges obviously starting in the spring, players that were opting out, deciding to opt in, and the challenge that comes with that. And then not being able to go visit these guys on campus and truly talent evaluate. Can you trust them in the Zoom capacity? When you're on campus, you're able to run into three or four guys and get an honest assessment of who the kid is. But with all that being said and the challenges, I think it's pretty clear the Cowboys' offensive line is falling apart. And they're going to have to absolutely start addressing that again, as they did in the Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick eras. Is there an offensive lineman out there that Cowboy fans should start keeping an eye on?
Well, you're gonna have to lose a lot of games to get Penei Sewell from Oregon. Who's gonna
we might lose
tackle.
We might lose a lot of games here, Daniel.
Yeah, if that's the case, he'd be one, but he's opted out of the season. So if I don't know, I think he's probably working out in Los Angeles. So if you want to go, you know, take a little roadie and go find a gym in LA, you might find Penei Sewell working out there. Matthew Slater's is a tackle from Northwestern.
Love
he's also
name.
Opted out. He's a good player. So he's opted out as well. So they, you know, look, it's going to be, that's the tricky thing about this college football season. You've got so many of these guys are not playing. Some are coming back in. We get the Big Ten and the Pac-12. So a lot of those guys we haven't even seen yet. So it's going to be fun. If you want to just watch a great player, and I know Blake Jarwin, unfortunately, is hurt, but has turned into a good player. If you want to watch somebody that would be fun to watch in that Cowboys offense, watch Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida.
Yep.
I think he's got like 8 or 9 touchdowns already.
Yeah.
He's been phenomenal.
He's an animal. Now, just as we're wrapping up here, I'm curious, because with all this talk about effort and effort being a primary issue, I just want to get a scouting question in for you or an evaluation question in for you, the way that you did this. I remember I was talking to somebody one time within the league, and they said that if you want to get the best idea of a player's work ethic, because you got to know who to talk to on campus, who to talk to with the team, they said if you want to get the best idea of a player's work ethic and how they're going to come in there and work, the person you talk to is you talk to the strength coordinator or you talk to the strength staff. You find out who they are in the gym. Would you say that if the Cowboys are looking for, guys who will give better effort, guys who will be more committed, guys who are, will have higher work ethics. Is that something that you experienced as well? Was that you generally go find, like, you know, maybe a coach will fluff it up a little bit, but like you'll get the straight answer from the guys working with them in the gym every day?
Yeah, you always go talk to the strength coach. You always go try and talk to the strength coach and the assistant strength coach. I've always found my best source on work ethic, because even strength coaches, a lot of times, you know, when you have a bunch of scouts in the room, they're going to give you kind of a little bit of a safe answer, because we've seen these players find out, it's gotten back to them that a certain coach, a strength coach or position coach has dogged them out, and then it's a big mess and the coaches don't want to deal with that. So I actually found my go-to source, I would go find the film coordinator. Because they would always say, you know, the coach would say he loves football. He's passionate about football. Can't get enough football. 100 out of 100 if we're talking about how passionate he is. And just a worker, unbelievable worker. So I'm like, oh, that's great. So I go to the video coordinator, like, and hey, how, I know you guys can track like how much tape these guys watch, like this particular player. Is he checking out? It used to be when I was scouting, this will date me, but you used to have to, you know, have a computer and check out the computer and be able to watch the tape that way. Now they can monitor it all by where you log in and how much time you've spent on there, and be like, no, that's, I never see the guy. Or he'll be like, no, what, he's in here every morning at 5 a.m. I got to set him up to get him to, you know, set up so he can watch tape. Those guys gave me great information and they didn't know not to lie. So that's where I found a lot of guys, you know, were doing extra work. The other thing is Ozzie Newsome's question he used to always ask, which was awesome, is we'd be sitting in there and we go, who's the leader of the defense? I'm the leader of the defense. Okay. Do you guys watch any extra tape together, like outside the facility? Oh yeah. Yeah. Who organizes that? Oh, I organize it. Okay. When you're watching the tape, who holds the clicker? And they'll go, oh, the other linebacker holds the clicker, and you go, okay, yeah. So the other guy linebacker does everything. He runs everything. Okay, we're good. It all came down to whoever had the clicker, that's the guy who's the leader, who's running the whole thing. So spare me the whole, I set everything up, I did everything. Like, no, that's all.
Yeah, you're putting all the effort in. You're not relinquishing control to somebody else. I love
yes.
that.
That's also, yes. Oddly enough, how they track guys who are doing film study now. That's also how I track if my son is actually doing schoolwork, is you go on the iPad and the screen time and you see what he's actually spending screen time on. So it, that works in the real world too.
There you go. That's all we're trying to do, is help people be better parents. I mean, that's what this podcast does.
Daniel, you are the best. You are so informative. I know that you're incredibly busy this time of year. So just so you know, we are honored that you blessed our podcast with your presence and some good intel here for the Cowboys fans.
No, I appreciate it. You guys are the best. Bobby, I'll got to get you a legit Padre hat,
though. Okay. I will wear it for you.
Okay. That works. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Joining us now is Paul Schwartz. He covers the Giants for the New York Post. He's been doing it since 1994. He's seen a lot. He's seen Jason Garrett as a backup quarterback. Then he's seen Jason Garrett as opponent. Now he sees Jason Garrett as an offensive coordinator. So there's really nobody better to ask about the Giants right now than Paul. You can follow him on Twitter at @NYPost_Schwartz. Paul, how you doing?
Good. One thing, I'm a little upset. You forgot to mention that I started covering the Giants in 1994 when I was 12 years old, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like the Doogie Howser reporter, yes, of the NFL at the time.
I'm really not old. I just was very precocious as a youngster.
Exactly. This is,
and
just
Joe Judge was just entering high school. You know, it's kind of wild.
Joe Judge was just a twinkle in his mother's eyes. Yes.
Pretty much. So, you know, the big thing, I guess the big storyline everybody's talking about this week is the Jason Garrett reunion at AT&T Stadium. It seems like there's a lot of unhappiness. There's some brewing discontent, I think, with Giants fans over Jason Garrett. They've scored at most 16 points this year. They are the worst scoring team in the NFL. They've lost Saquon Barkley. Daniel Jones has struggled. Is everybody already ready to run Joe Judge and specifically Jason Garrett out of town there in New York?
Well, not quite that. But, look, people were very excited when, you know, I mean, people didn't know who Joe Judge was. Okay, so he's hired. He's a 38-year-old. Special teams coordinator from the Patriots. Okay, we all know what the Bill Belichick tree has, a lot of broken branches, let's say, right? So, okay, people are skeptical of that. Then, okay, who's your offensive coordinator? Who's your defensive coordinator? That's the key. This guy is not an offensive or defensive guy. So when Jason Garrett's name came up, people didn't say, oh my God, we want him as our head coach. But look, as an offensive coordinator, he's had some good offenses in Dallas. We said, I think most of the fans also said, look, this is smart. He's been a head coach for 10 years. He'll help this this, you know, rookie head coach. So that seemed smart. He's developed quarterbacks. He did a good job with Dak. Now he gets Daniel Jones. Yeah, the results have been bad. 11.8 points a game. Very little in the way of, I mean, they don't have a lot of emotion at all. I think he's keeping it very simple. They don't have a lot of play action at all, which is something that Daniel Jones, much like Eli Manning, really succeeded in. They haven't run the ball. I mean, Saquon Barkley got hurt in the second game of the season, and at that point he was doing awful. I mean, mm-hmm. awful. So you can't say, well, Saquon was great, now he got hurt. No one's giving up on Jason Garrett at this point, but he's got to pick it up a little bit, and this is the week to do it, right? I mean, I don't have to tell you guys, the Cowboys haven't stopped you know, anything. And so I'm not saying the Giants have to go in there and win, but if they lose and they score 10 or 17 points, it's not a good look. It's not a good look because also you know that Jason Garrett, even though he did not give us a darn thing this week on Zoom, you know, God's worst creation as far as trying to get good stuff out of people. Although I guess we wouldn't be, you know, where we are without it. So I shouldn't, the good people of Zoom, I shouldn't complain too much about Zoom. We love you, Zoom.
We're on Zoom right now.
Webex, whatever nonsense we have. You know what? I never even heard of Zoom before this pandemic. Okay?
I wish I'd invested in it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So, but you know, Garrett, Jason was not good. He was not, you know, opening a vein and giving us all this great detail about his days and downs.
He won't.
And he won't. But you know that this is a big deal for him. You know it's a big deal.
I'm curious, does he still start out the press conferences there when he talks to you guys over Zoom? Does he start out, does he lead off and say, how are we doing, guys?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's what everybody's still familiar with in Dallas. How are we doing, guys?
Yeah, yep.
I appreciate his consistency, though. The one thing I even felt like Mike McCarthy this week changed a little bit, right? Like we talk, Jason Garrett's whole thing was you don't get too high, you don't get too low. It was like, all of a sudden, he was like dropping these little zingers about his menu of love. And, you know, it was the Jerry Jones strategy of diffuse, deflect. And all of us reporters always chase that really fun soundbite, right? So we found ourselves, I think, marinating on these fun soundbites. And I was like, he's changing a little bit.
Yep.
And that is not something that Jason Garrett ever did. So love him or hate him for it, he never adjusted. What weapons do they have on offense that at least this defense is studying and film this week if it's not the Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones is struggling? Are there any – there's no Sterling Shepard. Is there any wide receivers worth keeping an eye on, tight ends for the Cowboys fans that are scouting ahead of this game?
Well, yeah, there's Darius Slayton was a fifth-round pick last year from Auburn, and, you know, that's what he is. He's a fifth-round pick from Auburn, and we've all seen that guy could be good, that guy could get cut, right? We don't know. Mm-hmm. He was excellent last year. He had a real chemistry with Daniel Jones right away. He's a good player. He is finding now in this second year that there's no Sterling Shepard. Golden Tate is Golden Tate. He's a 10-year veteran. He's serviceable. You know, he's not going to make a big difference. So all of a sudden people are saying that and Slayton's their big vertical threat. So I'm sure the Cowboys are looking at this and saying, look, we got to, you know, we're not giving him, you know, Michael Thomas treatment, certainly, but we have to kind of pay attention. He can take it over the top. And so Darius Slayton is having to, you know, have that weight on him. He's a good player. He's not keeping any defensive coordinator up at night, but he's a good player. And Evan Engram, who has a lot of ability, but he is kind of one of those guys that, okay, what do you got? We see it. It's a flash. It's a little this, it's a little that. Then he gets hurt. He's been healthy this year. He has not had a good season. He's in his fourth year. The Giants picked up his fifth year option. Right now it's trending downward for him. He drops a pass in two games ago. The first play of the game, they try a little razzle dazzle, and there's a RPO and there's a pitch. It's a bad pitch by Daniel Jones. Evan Engram could get it. He doesn't. It goes off his hand, fumble. First play of the game. I mean, that's a disaster. Luckily, the defense held the Bears to a field goal. So those are the two guys. And Devonta Freeman, you know, Cowboys fans will remember he was a good player at one point. Mm-hmm. He was a really good player for the Falcons. He was off the street. He was not on anybody's roster. They signed him. This will be his third game. He looked rusty last week. He looked like, oh, that's a good move. That's a good cut. He should have gotten 7 yards. He got 5. He'll be better, I think. Wayne Gallman is just a spot guy. So there's not a lot there. I mean, I don't expect there to be a offensive eruption this week. And that's the problem, because there probably has to be, because the Cowboys can score. They can't stop anybody. But we know, as you know, I don't have to tell you, they can score.
defensively, how are they up front when we consider the challenges now of this Cowboys offensive line with the news, of course, of left tackle Tyron Smith out of this one, their second starting tackle to lose this season?
Yeah, no, the Giants have certainly taken notice that the Cowboys offensive line is not what it was. What, three-fifths are gone? Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the big guys are not there. They're a solid, their defense is playing better than anyone thought. Patrick Graham, who was the defensive coordinator in Miami with the Dolphins for 1 year. Yep. And then he kind of took a lateral move to come with Joe Judge. It was interesting. They gave him a better title, but he was a linebackers coach with the Giants a few years ago. He was with the Patriots, of course. And he's from that Belichick school. Every week, the defense looks different. Okay. Now there's core guys, Blake Martinez and James Bradbury, they'll have all the snaps, but otherwise you have, you know, one guy, one time a they'll play more three safeties. Then he'll play one of the outside linebackers. Lorenzo Carter will play all the snaps, but maybe Kyler Fackrell will get 57 snaps. And then the next week, Marcus Golden will get 23 snaps. You know, it's very hybrid. It's a 3-4. Leonard Williams is a good player. Dalvin Tomlinson's a good player. Dexter Lawrence is their sort of young stud. He's no Aaron Donald, but he's a good player. Their defense is better than expected. They went into L.A. last week. The Rams can score, and they held them to 17 points, and that was a legit – they had one busted coverage that gave them a touchdown. Their run defense is good. So this is not a vice grip defense that you have to, you know, like you see somebody see, oh, my God, you got – weapons all over the place. They kind of do it as a collective. And so if they can keep their heads about them, because the Cowboys can do a lot of things, you know, I think they can be okay. They've only had one really bad game, and that was against the immortal Nick Mullins and the 49ers. They laid an egg. Other than that, the defense has been okay.
When you look at that, the Cowboys are banged up on the offensive line. Would you expect the Giants to just look at that and go, okay, let's focus on just trying to get pressure home with our standard amount of rushers and devote some coverage here and as much resources as we can to covering these receivers? Or do you think they will try and say, hey, you know what? This is already a banged up offensive line. Let's try and blitz some. Let's try and really generate some pressure and see if we can get them to make some mistakes.
This is not a real, real high pressure defense that we've seen so far. Blake Martinez said it best the other day when talking about how well they did with the Rams. He said, our mission every play was to make them take another snap. You know, make them take another snap. Okay, 3 yards, seven, first down. Don't beat us over the top. Don't beat us fast. Because he said, you know, the Rams didn't want to do that. Now, the Cowboys want to make big plays too, but the Cowboys have Ezekiel Elliott. And if, you know, they can pound the ball, we know that that's not a problem for them. Maybe the offensive line won't let them do it. But like I said, it's too much to expect of this Giants defense to hold. They held the Rams to 17 points. You need to win that, what, 85% of the time? Yep. In this league? You need to win those games. And they didn't, you know, they scored. The Giants have not scored a touchdown in 8 quarters in a year where scoring is up, right? Scoring is up. And the Giants have they've got 6 field goals the last 2 weeks. That just is not cutting it. It's not cutting it at all.
It's a great nugget. Might use that on game day morning. Thank you.
You have it. Yes, it's allowed.
Ahead of game day morning, what injuries are going to be the most significant that you think we should be keeping an eye on Sunday for the Giants?
You know, it's a strange thing. The Giants are very healthy, other than the fact that some guys are just out for the year. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, it's weird. Like after Saquon Barkley got hurt, the next week their injury report had almost nobody of consequence on it. The Giants are very healthy, and then you go, oh, by the way, Saquon's out for the year. Xavier McKinney, the second round pick from Alabama, he's out. You know, he's got a broken foot, so he's out. So he's a guy who's out, but you kind of forget about. But this week, the key guy is Jabril Peppers. Okay, Jabril Peppers is their strong safety. He's one of those guys, like I said, the core guys: Blake Martinez, James Bradbury, Jabril Peppers. If there are 80 defensive snaps, they will play 80 defensive snaps. If there are 65, he'll play 65. So, but he didn't play last week. He turned his ankle. So we'll see. He's limited. You know, it's hard, as you guys know, we're not out there as much. It's hard to get a sense to see what he's doing. He was limited yesterday. It sounds like he'll be limited again today. I think it's 50-50. If I had to bet your money on it, I'm not betting my money on it. Dane, if I had to bet your money on it, I would say he won't play. But he could play. I don't know if he can play and play 80 snaps, but he's the guy, because then you have Julian Love, Logan Ryan, they signed him when the season started. He's already playing every snap for them. So he's a guy, he can blitz a little bit. He can cover a tight end. He's good against the run in the box. You know, he's one of the three or four core defensive players that when he is not there, he is missing. He could be missing again.
Paul,
we appreciate you being a full participant in our show. So thank you so much for popping on and doing this podcast, especially, like I said, we're working around so much these days. We know it's another Zoom, so we appreciate you doing this one.
Zoom away. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul. All right, well, there are a number of storylines heading into this game. Can the Cowboys get their defense straight? What will this offensive line look like? Will Jason Garrett turn the New York Giants into Team 40 or 50 burger? I mean, who knows? They may score 40 points by halftime. We just never know with this 2020 Cowboys team. It's always an adventure. But Jane will have reports for you on Saturday morning from NFL Network. You're probably watching this now around this time, so check her out on Good Morning Football Weekend, as well as on NFL Game Day Morning. So she'll have you covered on both fronts with all the updates. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're going to have to lose a lot of games to get Penei Sewell from Oregon, who's going to be the top tackle.
We might lose a lot of games here, Daniel.